Today is the continuation of and the final segment of What Explains Ill Health. So this is What Explains Ill Health, Part 2. Up to this point, I basically focused on chemicals and our perceptions of threats as explanations for ill health. Now, I want to shift gears and talk about consciousness. It's a more complicated process, a little bit more abstract, esoteric, a little more difficult to get our minds around. But our individual consciousnesses explain ill health. So if we think of our individual consciousness as kind of like a conglomeration of a huge number of energy patterns to include our thoughts, our feelings, the words we've spoken and the words we've heard or read or somehow have taken into our field, our beliefs, our actions, the things we did and the things we did not do, our fears, hopes, dreams, even superstitions and prejudices and the things we love and the things we hate, the things we accept and the things we reject, and many other energy patterns would fit into this. So our consciousness really is comprised of an enormous number of energy patterns that inspire us, influence us, and also interfere with us as we seek to live life. There are statements in Christ Returns reveal startling truth that emphasize how important our consciousness is and our need to cleanse our consciousness of those things that would interfere with it functioning fully and allowing the divine to influence us as it desires to do. I like the quote from Christ Returns, and there are many of them in there that I really, really like. But this one says something to this effect. We don't need to improve our lives or heal our bodies. We need to heal our beliefs. And to me, that kind of narrows down our field of search, if you will. So what am I going to do to change my life for the better? Well, hopefully, we would work on changing our beliefs. Another book that I'm in the midst of rereading, and I like it a real lot and I recommend it, is The Power of Awareness by Neville Goddard, G-O-D-D-A-R-D, is his last name. He says, much like Christ says, everything is consciousness. Everything is consciousness. So in my language, we acquire chunks of consciousness. There's my phrase, chunks of consciousness in our lives. All the material goods that we have in our environments, in our homes, in our workspaces, and offices are chunks of consciousness. Beliefs are chunks of consciousness. The books on your shelf and the books on my shelf are chunks of consciousness. So is your car, so is my car. And it goes on and on. Chunks of consciousness. As far as I can tell, when I add a new book to my shelf, no other book on my shelf rejects or resents the fact that I'm adding another book, sometimes in conflict with the messages or the themes of the books already up existing on the shelf. So maybe, even though books are chunks of consciousness and they contain consciousness, they don't seem to have the consciousness that sets them up to reject non-similar books, non-similar consciousness. We can't say the same for human beliefs, right? These chunks of consciousness, our beliefs, they're like guard dogs. You want to prove this point to yourself? Go start talking about religion or politics with somebody, maybe in a group setting like a cocktail party or out in public. Woo! These beliefs will rise up, these guard dogs will rise up in us and other people, and they're going to try to prevent non-similar ideas from entering our consciousness. But similar ideas? oh, come right in, come right in. And we'll open the gates, the door to our heart and mind, and allow ideas in that substantiate or are in alignment with things we already believe to be true, even if they're not accurate, even if we're wrong, even if our beliefs are completely false. We'll accept other ideas that are in harmony with those that we accept. It's like, whoa, man. You can just see that the fact that ideas seem to allow in other ideas that will strengthen them, to bolster them, to reinforce their rightness. And I really think this is one of the challenges dealing with the psychological aspect of habits. So if you look at a habit pattern, let's say cigarette smoking, there's a psychological element to that, and then there's a physical behavioral element to that. And whatever we believe, the psychological element, whatever we believe about that habit that got us started, we're going to have a hard time breaking it unless we can shift the belief regarding it. And I think that it really explains why a lot of people have difficulty changing a habit, even though part of them, I want to, but their beliefs tend to hold that in place. Beliefs dictate how we see ourselves. Not only us, not only how we see ourselves, but how we see the world, life, other people, God. It's how we see our abilities to learn, to grow, to change, to heal, to succeed. How we see our ability to love and be loved. You know, are we lovable? Our beliefs will let us know to what degree we're lovable. Our beliefs are in control of our lives. If we're ill, we need to change our beliefs. If we're unhappy, we need to change our beliefs. If we're unsuccessful, we need to change our beliefs. If we are unloved or unloving, we need to change our belief. That's all. That's all. Simple, right? Not necessarily easy, but simple. Beliefs explain ill health. Changing beliefs, well, sometimes I think it's not an idea or a concept that's highly promoted or marketed, primarily because we can do it on our own. We can do it on our own. But there are methodologies, and I'm involved in some of them, that such as the Healing Codes or Emotional Freedom Technique, and there are many others, Emotion Code, Holosync, Hypnosis, and so on and on and on, that have real value. And the goal of those methodologies is to change beliefs. They don't emphasize so much that underlying, that's what we're doing, because I think if it became clear, oh, well, then I can do it on my own, which I believe to be true. So we tend to add mystique to the processes to flush them out, to make them more complicated, to make them more marketable, to make them appear more valuable, so we can charge a higher price for them. I could describe ill health as a symptom of life force deprivation. Life force deprivation. And if I wanted to use the technologies that currently exist on the planet, you know, scientific instruments and so on, and use those devices for measuring, some of those devices and the readouts would be, oh, low oxygen levels, too much acidity in the body, low pH, said the same thing two different ways there, not enough voltage, that's another way of saying the same thing. All of these would indicate life force deprivation. It's like, wow, is that what's going on? I talk about us needing to manage matter, energy, space, and time. That's what we manage, or that's what we seek to manage, or that's what we need to manage. Matter, energy, space, and time. The matter that we take into our bodies, I'll say food, water, the air we breathe, those things are directly related to our life force. The energy in matter, energy, the energy that we ingest is also directly related to life force. Negative emotions are known to lower the pH in the body, which is the same thing as saying they reduce the voltage of the cells. So it's more difficult for a cell to produce a healthy cell. If a cell can't give birth to a healthy cell, that's a problem. Yeah. And it's the same thing as saying the oxygen in the cell needed to fuel and power the cell has been reduced as well. Negative emotions do that. Negative emotions do that. So think. Maybe there are some energy patterns that I might want to cleanse. The fact is, in Christ Returns, Christ recommends cleansing our consciousness of these damaging energy patterns because they're damaging us. They're damaging us as we take them in and hold on to them and express them. They damage us even more. This explains ill health. So what are those toxic energies that Christ says we ought to cleanse from our consciousness? They're tools, they're weapons. We think of them as these things. If I express them, they're going to keep me safe. Try this. Criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander. If we're lower awareness, we will use them more and more on other people, and unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, these toxic energies, when we express them, we express them to ourselves. If we sow them, we will reap them. We can't just send that out. When we send it out, we're sending it inward as well. People think, oh, you know what, this is it. I'm doing that. I'm denigrating other people. I'm judging them. I'm being sarcastic. I'm disempowering them. And my ego impulses say, this is the way to do it. This is the way to protect myself and get my needs met and come in first in a race of life and get all the best stuff for myself and be able to maintain my control over all my possessions. If I use these energy patterns as weapons or tools against others who might threaten me. The ego is trying to convince me and you that we're threatened by other people, external circumstances. It's like, we buy into that. We are following a false road because it's incorrect. The law of cause and effect says that what we think, feel, say, and do to other people will be done to us. There's no escaping it. If we do it to them, it's going to be done to us. If we steal from them, it will be stolen from us. Like, oh boy. Yeah, that's another reason it's not a good idea to maintain those negative characteristics, those energy patterns, and use them, because they boomerang. If we can cleanse our consciousness and start to elevate our awareness of our relationship to the divine and our relationship to one another, then more harmonious energy can flow. And when we don't understand that, that explains ill health. Holy books of all types say, we reap what we sow. We reap what we sow. And it seems surprising, right, that maybe in kindergarten or preschool or first grade or somewhere along the line, somebody would say, here, this is reality. We reap what we sow. And then teach us all the ways that this shows up in various lives. Obviously, a farmer would go, oh, yeah, that makes sense to me. I plant crop A, I get crop A. I reap harvest. My harvest is similar to what I sow. No mystery there. But we don't get taught that. And that one missing bit of information can explain ill health. I think there's another reason why the law of cause and effect is so important. It's important because human beings must sow. We must sow, and we must reap. We must initiate action and get a response, get feedback. We have to do it. We do it all the time. We do it all the time. It's part of being a living being. And, of course, the number of ways we can sow as human beings is virtually infinite. Tremendous variety is possible to us. But that need is built into us. We must sow and we must reap. And you go, Well, if it's the only way to live, and if I don't do this, I'm going to die. Being ineffective at sowing and reaping explains ill health. A farmer would immediately know if they were ineffective at sowing and reaping, they're like, I got problems with being a farmer. If I'm ineffective at sowing and reaping, I either need to learn more, become more aware, so I can be effective, or I got to find a new way to express my energy. Maybe farming is not for me. We start physical life by acquiring energy. I could call that reaping, right? Take a little baby. That little baby is not really going to do much work, not going to do a lot of sewing. All it can make noises in order to provoke a response, and it does that. But babies need to get energy. They need to get energy through the air they breathe, through the food that is being provided to them. Warmth, comfort, a feeling, energy of safety, of connectedness by being held, all of that. It's like, oh, that baby is reaping. Yeah, they're acquiring energy. Yep. A little while later, we, as infants, can learn how to cause energy flows. If I do this, I cause a positive energy flow. If I do that, I don't. We learn to sow through our thoughts and our feelings and our words and actions, even as little teeny kids. You know, smiling provokes a reaction. Gurgling in the crib provokes a reaction. Crying sometimes provokes a positive reaction of care and being changed or being held or being fed. But other times, depending on how somebody translates that signal, an emotionally overwhelmed parent, for instance, like, whoops, oh boy. That child can learn that certain behaviors produce certain harvests, some of which are pleasurable, some of which are painful. We learn what reinforces our sense of self, our identity, and we learn what hurts it. Because we learn and are taught invalid beliefs and rules of life, sometimes we're not that effective at causing desirable results. If we don't know true rules of cause and effect, we're like, I guess I have to have bad luck. I broke a mirror. It's like, that's superstition. That's not a spiritual law. Operating rules with rules of life that are not valid, that don't work, that don't predict and produce consistent results, explain ill health. As living beings and moving beings, we advance, right? We advance not only physically. You just think, hey, at one point you and I were fertilized ovum, little teeny, teeny things, and now not so little teeny. But we also advance our identity. We do that by expressing our energy, our thoughts, our feelings, words, actions, our beliefs, superstitions too, right? Somebody made up that rule about the mirrors. We express and advance our identities. Here's a challenge we have to deal with constantly in life. How to advance our own self-interest without violating others' self-interest and without being violated for having advanced our own self-interest. That's fairly complicated, but I think it's hugely important, so I'm going to repeat it. We need to learn and figure out how to advance our own self-interest without violating the self-interest of others and without being violated for having advanced our own self-interest. And you know, probably as I said that maybe the second time, there's a element of fear. If I advance my self-interest, well, I don't know how they're going to react. I better not. You go, ooh-wee. And when we have experiences of having advanced our self-interest and the repercussions or the consequences were painful, we begin to fear expressing and advancing our own self-interest. And those challenges and those experiences, those events, those fears produce feelings of insecurity about our ability to deal with the possible repercussions. They become boogeymen in the closet or saber-toothed tigers that are imaginary, and we keep creating them. And then when we consider standing up for ourselves, advancing our self-interest, taking care of ourselves, maintaining our borders and boundaries and self-respect, uh-oh. And that explains ill health. If we're effective at maintaining our self-interest without creating resistance in ourselves or in others, you know, that fear that I just alluded to, I'm worried about the repercussions, I'm worried about how they're going to react, I'm worried about what they're going to say or do to us, we just created resistance in other people. I might not do it well. We created resistance in ourselves. And if we could be effective at maintaining our self-interest without creating that resistance in us or others, we would have more balanced energy flows in our lives and in our activities. But when we don't, that ineffectiveness explains ill health. When we have painful experiences of not being able to protect our self-interest from others, we learn to be defensive. Being self-protective instead of growth-oriented and open to positive experiences and all kinds of possibilities and probabilities closes us off to the full potential and closes us off to the flow of divine support and the healing spirit, which otherwise would come to us. The divine is seeking to provide for all of its creations in a variety of ways, but when we're defensive and resistant to our environments and things that we create in our imaginations, we limit the influence and the impact and the support of divine health and healing. And that explains ill health. One of the points about this defensiveness, it's natural. It's a natural ego characteristic. And the challenge is, what happens is, we think, when we think of that we as individuals, we have to do everything. We have to keep ourselves safe. We have to meet our own needs. We have to be successful. We have to do a lot of stuff. We have to have a lot of stuff. All of that. It's like, whew. We're listening to the ego that limits our insight into the bigger picture of who and what we are and who and what the divine is and how life really works. But the ego doesn't see that the divine is actually working for us, in us, or through us. It's like, no. Doesn't notice that the divine is providing for our growth, our nutrition and nourishment, our healing, our protection, our fulfillment of need, our work, our survival, in a world influenced by rhythm, and in a world governed by the law of cause and effect. Ego, no. It's only us. It's all about us. It's only about us. Whew. The lack of understanding of these divine intentions of growth, nutrition, and nourishment, and so on, and our refusing to align with them so they can carry us to where we want to go, explains ill health. These energies are going where we want to go. They're like trains. They're like waves of energy. They're like a current in the ocean of our good, going to where we want to go. They're cruise lines going to where we want to go. And if we don't align with them, we don't get on board, well, pretty clear what that explains. I mentioned this. This is the quote. You don't need to heal your bodies or try to make your lives better. You need to heal your beliefs. That's in letter two. I want to talk about the ego, threats, and demands now, because, frankly, they explain ill health. Christ talks about the ego expressing through the personality with four driving needs. And the first driving need is the need to defend ourselves from criticism and to defend ourselves from emotional and physical attack. Most of us can understand the pain of being criticized by somebody else. Like, oh, that doesn't hurt. I don't like them. Ah, they say unkind things to us, right? And it seems to most of us that somebody else is the threat. The ego would say, somebody else is the threat. You know, the other people will criticize you. So other people will attack you emotionally. Other people will attack you physically. Yes, it's somebody else is the threat. I don't think so. Look at this. When you evaluate the quantity and the intensity of criticism in your life for just one aspect, I could go into judgmentalism or sarcasm or denigration or any number of those negative characteristics, but let's just stick with criticism. When you look at the quantity and intensity of criticism in your life, you will notice you are the threat. You are the threat. In my life, I'm the threat. You're the one who is frequently or even constantly criticizing other people and yourselves. And if we're criticizing other people at the same time that we think we're broadcasting outwardly, we're broadcasting inwardly, and we're taking that energy of criticism in and harming ourselves. I bet that 99% of criticism comes from us, and 1% comes from other people. Even in hostile environments, if you live or you have to work with somebody who is really hostile, I will bet that you still are the primary or majority producer of criticism that hurts us, that hurts you. Looks like them, but it's us. And to make matters worse, we have a diet, a steady diet of criticism. Right? Look at the media. Newspapers, magazine articles, ads, all kinds of stuff. Television, talking heads, 6 o'clock news. We're sold and told who the enemies are. We're trained to hate them. We're trained to disrespect people. And as we go into this vibration of hate that's being sold to us, we radiate hate outwardly and inwardly. I used to like going to the grocery store when the newspapers right by the conveyor belt by the cashier used to talk about who had alien babies and stuff like that. But now, it's mostly disgusting stuff. You know, awful stuff. All horrible stuff. It's like, eggs. I want really weird stuff that you don't have to take seriously. That energy doesn't impact us because it doesn't penetrate. But the stuff that's there now bathes us in hate and disrespect. We're sold it, and we accept it. And when we accept it, and when we broadcast it, this explains ill health. Problems are magnified in the media, right? You look at this stuff, terrorism, global warming, all awful stuff. One of the problems is due to the higher human nature, we want to improve stuff. We want to deliver high vibration energy to situations. We want to make things better. And those things create demands in us. But the challenge is, the stuff that's presented as a demand on TV, you got to hate everybody of this color, of this religion, of this race, of this country, of this ideology, of this belief system, of this religion. You can't really make that better. So we don't have any specific or effective response to stuff like that. And so that stress rises in us to damaging levels. Like, how did I just get so toxic? It's the energy we took in, and that explains ill health. The belief in having enemies too powerful to conquer, and having problems too numerous and complicated to solve. That's like, here's an enemy that you can't beat, and here's a problem that you can't solve. Good luck. How do you feel now? Depressed, in despair, incredibly angry, frustrated, and ill. The human ego is necessary to life. We can't do without the ego. But we don't have to give our lives over to the ego to control, or to give our lives over to other people's egos to control. We can master our egos. We can use that energy. Instead of being a slave to it, we can use it. There's no question that in our lives, your lives, my lives, to date, we have taken in poisons. Poisonous chemicals, poisonous thoughts, poisonous beliefs, poisonous feelings. All of those things have afflicted us. And they explain ill health. But our bodies are designed, they are divinely designed to expel, release, excrete, let go of energies that no longer serve us. And anybody who's eaten food that is gone bad as spoiled, or anybody who's been foolish enough to have overconsumed alcohol on a Friday or a Saturday night or something, and frankly, anybody who's been toilet trained realizes, hey, letting go is a major step in the direction of health. So we can throw it up, we can excrete it in a more pleasant form or not, but letting go is a huge step in the direction of health. Refusing to let go of toxic beliefs, refusing to let go of toxic attitudes, toxic superstitions, toxic fears. That's killing us. And refusing to let go of them explains ill health. Everything is consciousness. Everything is energy. Everything is a frequency of vibration. Holding on to lower vibrations like fear, anger, shame, despair, grief, etc., does two things. Number one, it indicates a lack of understanding of how life and our bodies work. And two, it explains ill health. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.